At Ability Chiropractic, they do things differently. They believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Their doctors take time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, they help you restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.
All right, remember, the machine knows if you're lying. First statement, Carvana will give you a real offer on your car all online.
False.
True, actually. Oh. You can sell your car in minutes.
False? That's gotta be...
True again. Carvana will pick up your car from your door, or you can drop it off at one of their car vending machines.
Sounds too good to be true, so true!
Finally caught on. Nice job. Honesty isn't just their policy, it's their entire model. Sell your car today, too.
Carvana.
Pickup fees may apply.
Patrice de Motis was a handsome, charming, and well-educated Frenchman with an aristocratic family, a respectable insurance business, and a warm welcome in the smartest Parisian saloons. He was also a compulsive gambler and a legal bookie. Between the late 50s and the early 70s, Desmoutis made a daring attempt to beat the French-run, state-run betting system. His success alarmed the authorities to such an extent that they repeatedly changed the rules of betting in an effort to stop him. It is the subject of a new book called Monsieur X, the incredible story of the most audacious gambler in history, written by Jamie Reed. Delighted that Jamie is joining me live on the line from, by the sounds of it, a snow-trapped cottage somewhere in the UK.
Absolutely, yes. Down here near Bath in England, we had snow drifts for about 48 hours, and we're just beginning to thaw out properly now, I think, for the first time since last Wednesday.
Well, our wife hasn't been dropping you snow parcels of a rather nice sort of...
No, we haven't been that bad, fortunately. We've been actually very, very lucky compared with many people. We've been warm and cosy with food in the deep freeze and everything, so it's almost been picturesque, but on Thursday to Friday, it certainly wasn't. You know, it was uncharacteristic. I know the British are always going on about the weather, but it was uncharacteristically severe. But, you know, it really, really was horrendous.
From the snowbound cottages of Bath to the saloons of Paris, tell me a little bit more about this incredible story about Monsieur X. Who was he?
Well, he was a fascinating maverick individual, what I think of as a sort of overreacher, a daring gambler. He was a very well-connected, well-educated Frenchman who went to the best French schools. He was married to an aristocratic French wife. As you mentioned earlier, he had an insurance business in Paris and lots of good social contacts and connections. But he was also passionate about horse racing, and he was an ardent gambler. And the big thing about France, which some listeners may be aware of and some may not know, is that bookmakers, in the sense that we have them in Britain, were banned and prohibited in France as long ago as 1891. And the French state-run betting system, a little bit like the tote in the UK, is called the PMU, the Paris Mutuel. And this was a very rigid, bureaucratic system, particularly back in the 1950s and 60s. And they introduced a new bet called the Tiercé, where you had to try and predict the first three home in a particular race each day of the week in either the correct order or any order. And Monsieur de Moutis, who was a smart man who knew, had a lot of contacts in France's racing and training centres, and he knew owners personally, he used his connections to find out when he thought horses were fit and well and when maybe they weren't so fit and well. And he also used his mathematical skills to analyse a horse race. And he had the readies, the dough, the cash, to bet in much larger sums than most people. So he would take a 17-runner Tiercé race, and he would eliminate, as he thought he could, seven or eight of the runners, and he would back all the remaining runners in a multiple number of permutations. It wasn't illegal. It was clever. It was audacious. And three or four times between 1958 and 1962, he pulled off enormous victories by today's money. He was winning the equivalent of £4.5 million in 1962 on this wager. But the PMU is answerable to the French government because it's a very effective sort of revenue collecting system for the French authorities. And they started to panic that if this one clever, charming gentleman was winning every weekend, then what they rather patronizingly called the little man, the little punter, would be discouraged from betting, and they wanted the little man to bet in as large a volume as possible because the little punters, I'm afraid, weren't as smart and shrewd as people like Patrice de Moutis. So the PMU and the government kept changing the rules of betting in France to see if they could close down Desmoutiers' activities. But he was always smarter than them, and he kept getting the better of them. And finally, they criminalized his activities by introducing legal limits on the amount of money you could have on a TSA bet and the amount of bets you could have and the number of horses you could have. And to get around that, he recruited other people to bet for him. And that set him against the law. And they took out a writ against him, and they couldn't name him in court officially at the time, so it had to be a writ contra against Monsieur X, Monsieur X. And this name caught on in France. He became like a kind of Robin Hood figure. And the French papers started writing about him. Who is Monsieur X? Where does he live? How is he getting away with this? Isn't it wonderful? Somebody's sticking two fingers up to the state. And so for a long time, he was a hero, and people identified with him, and it was a romantic adventure. Then, unfortunately, the picture, as they say, darkened.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there is that very much that you describe him as almost a Robin Hood figure, but the flamboyant Frenchman taking on the, and if you've ever come into contact with the French bureaucratic system, the monolithic glacial speed and the heavy speed at which it moves.
Absolutely. You've summed it up completely. Monolithic and glacial. My wife and I lived in France together for 4 years, and although she's English, she lived in France for about 10 years or more on and off. And we love France dearly, but as you said, the state in France to this day can be infuriatingly bureaucratic and monolithic. And Desmoutiers objected to the idea that it was not possible to place bets with bookmakers, and he himself had offered a very suave, illegal bookmaking service to rich French racehorse owners who preferred to bet with him than with the PMU. But France had, and still has, its own specialist police force who monitor activities in the world of horse racing and casino gambling. And they were turned on him, and they started coming for him. And even though he did manage to stay one step ahead of them for a long time, eventually, and rather tragically, they actually drove him into the arms of the French underworld, who were down in Marseille, the Corsican Mafia, and in Paris. They were looking to launder money on fixed races, partly from the French Connection drug trade, where they were making huge amounts of money in the 1970s. And I'm afraid Patrice got caught up in their grip, and it didn't end happily or well for him.
I mean, to put it mildly, and this will be the understatement of the day, I think, so far. The mafia or the criminal gangs, organized criminal gangs operating out of Marseille, were not the sort of people that you would mess with.
They certainly weren't. But there was a funny overlap, particularly in the 60s, just as you had people like Frank Sinatra and the Rat Pack in the States, hanging out with mafia-made men in Las Vegas and New York. And you had some overlap like that in London in the 60s, in the swinging 60s with the club scene. Nightclubs were where you could meet, you know, a member of the House of Lords and a gangster and a film star and a photographer. And the French, I think, were the same. And movie stars, great actors like Alain Delon, who played a lot of gangsters in a lot of his films, and Jean-Paul Belmondo, they were sort of seen as slightly, you know, socially not, shall we say, totally unhappy to be seen in the company of the milieu, as they were called from time to time. But when you got involved with them to the extent that Patrice did, then as he actually did say near the end of his life, once these people have got you in your grip, there's no way out. You're done for. And it did become a kind of a gradually accelerating tragedy for him, in a way that makes for a very gripping story. But it did have terrible consequences for his family.
And but you can kind of see, you know, and I'm playing devil's avocado, if you like, or avocado, yeah, whatever you want to say.
Yeah.
You can kind of see why the French public, you know, the ordinary man in the street, would kind of like this sort of tale, because it is a, you know, it is a Scarlet Pimpernel. It is a
absolutely, completely, as you say, and the great sports writer, the Scottish sports writer Hugh McIlvany, who adores horse racing and has wrote so well about it for years in The Observer and then the Sunday Times, he came out with a wonderful line some years ago, which I've actually put with his permission at the preface of the book. He said, "When the French take revenge, it ravages the innocent as well as the guilty. They do it most lethally with the deplorable, inefficient way they run their pari-mutuel betting system." You know, and that was something that Desmoutiers felt. And that's why the poignancy of the fact that a lot of the wealthy French racehorse owners and trainers were happy to place bets with him, even people like Prince Ali Khan, the son, the father of the present Aga, who was a great racing man. They would bet with Dimouti in the 50s and the 60s. But then finally, when the authorities were really after him, and he went through a very dramatic court case in Paris in between 1971 and 73, then eventually they turned away and they closed their doors to him. And as he said to a friend, he felt as if he had the plague. Mm. And he was cast out from that social world. And that was very, very painful for him, and also, I think, for his wife, too.
But the other thing I was going to say is the fact that when we're talking about, we tend to think, you know, Paris and France as being all yep. gay and whatever, but yep. at the time, you know, France had been, this was only a decade, 15 years after the Second World War and the ravages of the Second World War. Yes. France was a very state-driven place, you know, you had de Gaulle, etc. And so you had characters like, I was about to mention Prince Ali Khan, but you also had people like Ruby Rosa, of course.
Absolutely. Oh, yes, he's a wonderful character, yes. And those sort of figures used to crop up at places like Longchamp and Chantilly. And they, too, would rub shoulders with all kinds of characters in the nightclubs. And one of the places where Monsieur Dimouti may have met some of his underworld friends initially, there was a bar in Paris called the Bar Cabaret Trois Canards, the Three Ducks.
Right.
And the gentlemen who hung out in there were known as the Bande des Trois Canards, the Three Ducks gang. And they weren't quite like the Cray twins in London, but they were serious villains, and they were probably charming on the outside, and they all liked to gamble. But their clientele of a night would include gentlemen in black tie and their beautiful Dior-clad lovers and mistresses and wives, as well as the underworld characters who hung out on the racecourses. And I think Patrice, even though he was as much wronged as a sinner, he was sort of fatally attracted to it all, you know, what the French call the mauvais garçon, the bad boys of the nightclubs and the racetracks. It was, and Monsieur X became like his alter ego. He was Patrice on the one side, the gentleman from Brittany and the 16th arrondissement of Paris, and then he was also Monsieur X, who with his cigarette and his smart suit, and he was playing cards late at night, you know, and it's very seductive, but it did have very grave consequences for him, I'm afraid.
That sort of lifestyle, you know, the old saying about, you know, the candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long, it sounds like he did that at both ends. Was he snubbing in the face? Was he rubbing it in the face of the French establishment? And was this...
That's a good point as well. The chap who was in charge of the Paris Mutuel in the 50s and 60s was a very scholarly, very dutiful man called André Carreau, who had been like so many French civil servants. He'd gone to, you know, one of those top schools, in his case, the École Polytechnique. He was trained to be a bureaucrat and civil servant, but he'd married into a family who had had shares in the Paris Mutuel. But he himself, he had no time for gambling, and he wasn't interested in horse racing. He thought gamblers were improvident and that they really shouldn't be encouraged. But he was told by the minister in France in 58, this is France, Carreau. In France, vice must be organized. So Monsieur Carreau's job was to make the PMU as profitable for the government as possible. And he did warn Patrice Dimouti, who I think he had a certain liking for to begin with. And after all, I know it's terrible, but they both came from the kind of top tier of French life. So it was almost as if they were in the same club. And he did warn him, you know, if you go too far, one day maybe your eyes will be bigger than your stomach, and this could really turn around and bite you. And I think Patrice slightly felt, well, you know, you're an elderly gentleman. I haven't got anything to worry from people like you. And I think he did flaunt it a little bit. He was described as, Carreau described him as like a man trying to seduce his daughter. And I think Dimouti did quite like that comparison.
How did you, because I don't want to go into how it ended up, because people won't want to read the excellent book, but how did you go about researching this particular book, Jamie? Was it a subject that you knew about beforehand?
I did know a bit about it. I mean, horse racing and gambling and the world of the gambler and the bookmaker has always been my great interest and passion. And I've been lucky enough to meet people in the world of racing down the years, from the late Sir Peter O'Sullivan, the great broadcaster and journalist, who was a consummate punter. And Peter had contacts in all the best French racing stables, and he knew Patrice Dimouti. And then I've met people like the bookmaker Victor Chandler, who's been living down in Spain in the last decade, and he and his father, who was a bookmaker before him, they knew Patrice. And I was lucky enough to meet people through them who could relay stories to me. And then also, I spent a lot of time in the British Library in London, going through all the old French newspapers, which was fascinating. And then I went to Paris and looked at documents there in the Great Library in Paris, which related to Patrice's court case. I found some books by two French writers that were very interesting and intriguing as well. And sort of gradually managed to put it all together. And it's part of the fun, like when I wrote this book, Doped, a few years ago, about a bookmaking scandal and conspiracy in Britain in
which
the late 50s.
Which just happened to win the William Hill Book of the Award, the Year Award.
It did, yeah. No, I was very lucky. I was absolutely thrilled to bits with that. That was fantastic. And as with Doped, writing Monsieur X, it's very exciting when you're researching it because the pieces in the jigsaw are gradually coming together. And I find all that kind of, I think you can tell a non-fiction true story with some of the pace and atmosphere of a novel. It doesn't have to be dry history. And that's really been one of my aims with this. And I think, Bloomsbury, the publishers, have made the book look lovely with a great cover, photographs. So, it has been a very exciting and enjoyable experience doing this, I must say.
And there's such a you couldn't have written a better cast of character, could you, really? I mean, you're setting them in France. You've got royalty, you've got the underworld, you've got bankers, you've got this Inspector Clouseau type who have figures
of the first members of this French police unit. They're called the Police des Courses et Jeux of racing and gambling. And the first inspector who was after Monsieur de Mouty was a gentleman called Commissaire Taupin, T-A-U-P-I-N. And he seems to be, when I read about him, he is a sort of vaguely Clouseau-like figure. Then, of course, near the final third of the story, when the stakes got very high and serious, when the authorities in Paris realized that this linked up to the mafia, then Monsieur Taupin was relegated to a desk job. And they brought in much tougher cops, Les Flics. They brought in a commissaire in Paris who was much more like Maigret, who was a shrewd, laconic, but very patient, very skillful policeman. And they also brought in a tough guy who could go down to Marseille and try and interrogate and find things out down there. And so once they were on the trail, things were, the jokes dried up pretty quickly, I think.
I mean, do you think that, in perhaps with this book, you're capturing a snapshot of a particular time of France on the cusp? You've got the playboys, you've got the royalty, just before the swinging 60s take off and France, takes off and becomes that, we really hit the 60s and the 68 riots and that sort of thing. Do you think it's a particular snapshot of a really fascinating time with a really fascinating cast of characters?
I think it was a fascinating time. You had wonderful developments going on in film, like the Nouvelle Vague films, the wonderful films made by people like François Truffaut and Jean-Luc Godard, Breathless with Belmondo, and these beautiful actresses like Jeanne Moreau and Catherine Deneuve. You had all that going on. And on the other side of the coin, you had General de Gaulle coming back as the president of the Fifth Republic, as it was called when it was inaugurated in 1958-59. And he was very conservative, Catholic, traditional, and he wanted a very authoritarian France. But I think for a lot of people, just as they love going to the movies or hanging out in a cafe and listening to jazz and smoking a gitane, the story of Monsieur X, for people who had a lot of conservative, traditional values being pushed at them in their school and home life, Monsieur X was an exciting alternative to all of that. So they got a vicarious thrill from reading about him and following his adventures.
Was there any point when you're doing your research in a library somewhere, or perhaps sipping on a Galois whilst looking at L'Equipe or Le Figaro, did you suddenly think, this is, I always call it the Eureka moment, a fact so sort of left field or amusing or amazing that you think, that, my friend, is the nub of what I'm writing about?
I think I did. I think without getting too fanciful about it, I think I spent time in Paris, and you, just by following in the footsteps over a number of days and evenings of where he went and trying to see it through his eyes and imagine what he was doing, it did bring him to life a lot. Also, one of the things that I found happens with these books, which are true stories, is that people, when they do hear of it, people you would never have known existed, shall we say, make themselves known to you and say, ah, I was involved in this person's life and I can tell you an interesting story about them. When I did Doped, the principal character was an English bookie gambler called Bill Roper, and a man got in touch with me a year after the book was published, and he said, I'm a retired judge. And he said, I was on the junior defense counsel for this man, Bill Roper, at his trial in Lewes in Sussex in 1963. And he had lots of hilarious stories to tell me about that. And with Patrice, I'm already getting an intimation that there are people with knowledge of how that there were rival camps inside the Paris Mutuel. There were people who were determined to bring him down, and there were people who retained a certain sympathy for him. And that's fascinating to see that emerging. So the book will have a paperback edition at Christmas or whatever.
Absolutely.
So we will be able to actually add details like that in you know, a few months' time.
And hopefully we'll speak about that then again when the paperback comes out. It's screaming out for, Jamie, it's screaming out for a film. It really is.
Oh, it's a good fun story, and as I say, I think it's a good yarn. People will you know, I think we give them their money's worth.
The book is called Monsieur X, the incredible story of the most audacious gambler in history. It's out on the 8th of March in hardback on Bloomsbury. You'll be able to download electronic versions of it as well. Jamie, if people want to find out more about you or about the book itself, do you do the social media thing? Is there a website?
Absolutely, I'm on Twitter and on Facebook, and Bloomsbury, the publisher, you know, there's lots of social media about the book out there as well.
It's a marvellous read. It really is fascinating. I'm holding the advanced copy in my hot little hands, I must admit. And it's going to be, if the rain in Spain continues, it's going to be my reading choice du jour. I just love the quote, though, which you have for Patrice, which is, there are two kinds of gambler, the good and the bad. They have only one thing in common. In the end, they all lose.
I know. That's the sad thing, isn't it? That was his feeling. Yeah.
Jamie,
most of the big gamblers, they'll say it's better to be the bookie than the punter. The house always wins.
Indeed. Jamie Reid, author of Monsieur X, it's been a pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Thank you very much. It's been great fun.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com.